cars in the driveway. The garage is full of junk. It'll take me a week to clean it, but by then I'll still be drunk. I got the blues. Oh, the homeowner blues. Well, man's home is his castle. This one's just a hassle. Homeowner blues.
Hello, friends, and welcome to this, the Homeowners Friend Podcast, the podcast that will help you achieve the American dream and live the best life you can, even on a rice and beans budget. I'm Steve, your host, and today's topic is going to be a bit of a smorgasbord. I haven't used that word in a while. We're going to cover a lot of different miscellaneous interior finishing things. I'm kind of coming to the conclusion of this little build-a-home series. I know there's not a whole lot... pardon me here, I'm adjusting my mic. There's not really a whole lot going left here for interior stuff. Just a lot of little things. I can't spend a whole show on, you know, putting in carpeting, because it's pretty, you know, it's pretty straightforward, and frankly, most people will probably have it done. So I don't want to, you know, spend a whole show on it. So I'm just going to try and hit some of these miscellaneous topics quickly. I might do a show or two like this, and then we'll probably get into start doing some more specific projects outside and things like that. So getting right into it, the first thing I want to talk about is putting some of your appliances in the kitchen, which is something you'll have to do. In the last podcast or the podcast before, whenever it was, we talked about, you know, mounting your cabinets and all that. And that's, that's pretty straightforward. That's already done. Putting the countertop in, you know, if you have, if you had Formica Corian or granite or something, they'll put it in for you. If not, you would have to put it in yourself. I'm not sure that I covered that, so I'll hit it quickly. If you're doing a Formica countertop, you'll have to install it yourself, chances are. But they may put it in, depends on where you buy it. But if you have to put it in, it's really not that difficult. You just pretty much lay it on side, then you just have to fasten it down somehow. I've seen people just use, just lay caulk on top of the cabinets that they've put in, you know, your base cabinets, where the top cabinet's going to sit on top of, you know, just to lay a little bit of silicone or a little bit of adhesive or something like that on top. Lay the counter on top and then just put a few screws in from the bottom, making sure the screws are very short so they don't go up through the MDF underlayment and push up on the bottom of your Formica. So you want to, you know that thickness. It's usually like a 5/8 thick or 3/4 inch thick piece of MDF. So you would buy a screw that's maybe 1/2 inch long or something like that. And, by going underneath some of the cabinets or taking out some drawers, you can probably put a few, L brackets in or something using those very short screws to hold it down from underneath. And you don't need to do much because it's pretty heavy and it's really not going to go anywhere. Probably if you put one L bracket, you know, every 5 feet, it would probably be adequate. It's just a matter of keeping it from sliding away from the wall. It's not going to lift up, you know, unless a tornado hits your house and you're going to have more to worry about than your counter. If that's the case, it's really not going to go anywhere. So a little bit of silicone will just kind of help it from rattling or moving a little bit. A couple of L brackets with, like I said, some very, very short screws, at least the ones going up, have to be very short. It's probably about all you need. And then you're going to, at the backsplash, if it has a built-in backsplash, that should hopefully line up to the wall. If your wall's a little bit crooked, you may find that it's sticky. There's some gaps between the backsplash and the wall. If that's the backsplash, not backstash, it's late. It's like 9 o'clock here. So pardon me, but if there's some gaps there, you can either put, if they're pretty minor, you can just put a nice bead of silicone caulk back there. If they're a little bit more extreme, you could still put more silicone caulk, or you could put like a piece of quarter round on top of it to hide the gap. Or if you want to get real ambitious, you can just take a pencil and lightly mark where the top of the cabinet is on the wall, and then mark where those areas are that are high, the high spots. You'd have to take this, do this on the high spots, and you can actually take that sheetrock and just chisel it out a little bit with a sharp chisel on the high spots. So the cap, so the countertop will kind of slide in to the sheetrock on those high spots. So the low, so the spots where it's, you know, out away from the wall will then be closer in and will hopefully touch the wall, or be close enough anyway so you can do your sheetrocking. So, you know, I see a lot this has to happen like in a corner, because sometimes the corners aren't exactly right. There's a little more mud, especially if you do your own job, and you put the mud real quick, more real thick in the corner. You may have to just take and slice a little bit where that counter is going to go in the quarter. You won't see it. It's going to be behind the countertop. So, you know, you won't see it. So it doesn't have to be a really neat job, but just chisel out a little bit of the sheetrock or a little bit of the mud anyway to do that. So, you know, take a nice sharp utility knife and scratch it along that line that you drew that was right on the very top of between the top of the backsplash and the wall that, you know, draw right across there, and take a nice sharp utility knife. You know, you're going to pull the countertop away and naturally so you can get in there and work decently, and take your utility knife and just kind of cut into the sheetrock along that line, and then chisel out some of the, you know, as much material as you need to underneath. And then supposedly, hopefully, when you put your countertop back in, it should slide into that little groove you just did. Now that groove may need to be fairly deep depending on how the countertop is made. It may be just at the top where it, you know, look at the back of the countertop where the backsplash is and see which parts of that backsplash are up against the wall. You know, like I say, it could be just the very top. It could be the top and a bit down near the bottom, you know, depending on how that backsplash is made and attached. You'll have to look at it. But hopefully it'll be pretty simple and it'll just be a matter of a, you know, 1 inch, you know, kind of a cut you have to put in the sheetrock. You can check that out. So, I mean, that's pretty much how you put the countertop in. When you want to go and put the sink in, you usually have to cut the hole in the countertop for the sink. Now, quite often when you buy a new sink, they'll give you a template for the sink. So that's a pretty handy thing, obviously. You just lay it on there and trace it. But you want to make sure you leave enough room for your faucets to be installed. You want to make sure that the sink is properly centered. So you really need to take a lot of time and work on doing this correctly. Make sure that it's centered amongst the underside of the cabinet, because the, you know, that sink needs to be on top of the base cabinet, the sink base, they call them, which is just a big old open cabinet where you do all your plumbing and everything underneath. You know, it needs to be centered on that. Make sure it's not back enough or forward too much. You know, you got to make sure it looks good where you're going to have it. Once you do that, you can just take a nice Sharpie or something and trace out that sink template onto the top of the countertop. Then you can take a jigsaw, and what I've seen people do, jigsaw typically, they'll use a jigsaw. You can buy a special blade that has the teeth going backwards. Usually with a jigsaw, the blade cuts when the blade's coming up, but with Formica, you want it to cut when the blade's going down. So that way, when you're cutting, you're pushing down on the Formica and down onto the base material. If you do it the other way, it's liable to do two things. It's liable to, A, chip the Formica, because you're pulling up from the bottom of the Formica. The glue can't hold that well. When you're pulling up from the bottom, the glue will loosen and the Formica will start jumping. So you'll have a bad bond there. And also it'll start, because it's starting to jump, it'll start chipping the Formica. It won't cut it clean. So you really want to get one of those Formica cutting blades, which, like I say, has the teeth backwards. You'll see on the downstroke, it'll be cutting instead of the upstroke. And you just buy those blades. They're cheap. They're, you know, like $2 for a set or something. I bought a set when I did my house. And you go ahead and you know, drill a hole up against the line somewhere, and then stick your jigsaw in and just cut the thing out. It's pretty straightforward. When you drop your sink in, you want to make sure you put a good bead of plumber's putty, or you could use caulk. I've seen people use caulk, but plumber's putty works a little bit better. It's a little bit heavier, it's thicker, and it stays soft pretty much indefinitely to some extent. And you'll put a bead of that around the inside of the outside, the inside of that. It'll be the outside of the hole, because that's what's going to be left on the counter. You want to put that bead around right where the edge of the sink is going to be. So you might want to just drop it on there dry, and then take like another pencil or something, and, you know, center the sink so it's where you want it to be. And then just take a pencil and just go around the outside edge of the sink and mark that on the countertop. You know, it'll erase easy. And then take and put your bead of, take the plumber's putty and roll it in your hands and make a long tube, you know, about the size of a McDonald's straw or maybe a little bit smaller, long, you know, bead of it or several beads of it. And just start putting it around that line, the inside of that line you just drew, like maybe a half an inch in. You can look at the bottom of the sink and see where it's going to be up against that countertop. But usually it's, you know, about a half an inch usually works. And go all the way around that outside. And remember, be generous with the bead. Don't, you know, put a little teeny bead. Put a pretty good bead in there so the sink can sit on it and really squish it out. You know, if it comes squishing out around the outside of the sink, that's fine. That's not a bad thing. Because that means it's also squishing in and it's completely filling that void. What you want to keep is water from leaking from the countertop under the sink. Because when that happens, the water is going to keep following the countertop till that cut. It's going to drop, obviously. Gravity is going to make it drop. And it's going to start getting that wood wet. Once that wood starts getting wet, it's going to start swelling. And it's going to start breaking your adhesion between the formica and the countertop. And it's going to start causing bubbles in your countertop, even out beyond the sink, because the water will travel underneath the cover, underneath the formica. It'll start causing bubbles and the glue will fail, and before you know it, your countertop will be a piece of feces, to be correct. So you want to make sure you do a good sealing job there. So then you just go ahead and put your sink in. You might need a hand. You usually can put your hand down through where the drain is, if you haven't already put the drain in, to hold it. Although I recommend it's a good idea to mount the faucet before you put the sink in, because it's a lot easier to mount the faucet when it's sitting on the floor or up on the counter or something on a blanket. And do make sure, and I got to tell you one other thing about cutting it, but before I do that, make sure you put a blanket or something on top of the counter if you're going to work on it. Don't ruin the countertop. When you're cutting the countertop and going around that mark with your jigsaw, it's a good idea to take some tape, like some mask, wide masking tape, or you could even use duct tape or something like that, and tape around the outside of that circle. And the reason is when you're cutting with your saw, the bottom of the saw, you know, it's a steel guide that's on the bottom of the saw, it could scratch the countertop. And if you put that tape there, it'll keep it from scratching. So that's something I forgot to mention. It's a good little tip to save your countertop. So go ahead and put that caulking all the way around. Drop the sink in where it's supposed to be. You got to be careful. You got kind of one shot. Otherwise, you'll have to, you know, put the caulk back again. And then once it's in there, you know, push down around the outside edge of the sink, unless it's one of those really heavy cast iron jobs, which will probably do some pretty good squishing itself. But if it's a lightweight, you know, stainless or something, push around the outside and make sure that caulk is oozing out good underneath the sink all the way around. Then you can just take a sharp utility knife or a putty knife or something. You just go around the outside of the sink and kind of cut that excess off. You can rub your finger around there or, you know, a putty tool or something and maybe put a nice edge on that caulk. It should be very thin. It should be barely there. And always when you're doing puttying and you're using your finger or even one of those tools to make a nice straight edge, if your finger's wet, it'll work better. The stuff doesn't stick to your finger as much. So just like have a sponge there, a wet sponge, and you can just wet your finger and then just rub it along the outside edge and it'll make a nice smooth joint there. So you go ahead and do that. So that's how you put your sink in. And again, just, you know, make sure you lay it out correctly and think before you cut. Once you cut it, you know, you can't uncut it. So do it right, or you'll end up buying new countertop, which is not good. So that's kind of putting the countertop in. The, formica type countertop. You're going to have to mount your dishwasher, your stove, your refrigerator as well. The dishwasher itself, you know, they all come with directions, so just follow the directions. But basically, you have to put it on there. You can adjust the feet so it fits at the right height. With a dishwasher, you have to get power to it, you have to get hot water to it, and you've got to get a drain to it. The dishwasher has pipes to get those items to a sink, a nearby sink. They give you some pretty long hoses. And generally, when you buy your sink hookup, your drain for your sink, if you buy a kitchen sink one. They have them that have the extra little connection for your dishwasher drain. It's just a little T. And the dishwasher comes with a flexible, like, rubber hose that you just slide over that and clamp it down. It's very easy to connect. That takes care of your drain. And then typically you'll get, I forget if it came with the dishwasher, if I had this, I had to sell it, buy it separately. But there's like a dishwasher kit for connecting the water. And basically it's a little fitting that you put where your shutoff valve is, you know, your hot water feed coming underneath the sink. There's a little valve that goes on there, a little T that goes on the valve, and one part of the T obviously connects to the valve itself, and one other part of the T goes to your sink, and then the other third part of the T goes to your dishwasher, and it just, you know, it all just screws together with you know, the hoses that you just screw on, and it's the easiest damn thing in the world to hook up. So that's how you get water to the faucet to the sink, from the sink to the dishwasher, and you just run those the drain and the hot water pipe through the side of your base cabinet, hopefully to your dishwasher, which is hopefully right beside your base cabinet if you put it in a good spot like that. If you didn't do that, then you've got to run a separate feed to your dishwasher and a separate drain and all that, which is a pain. That's why you generally see dishwashers right beside the sink. So that's how you hook a dishwasher up. As far as power goes, I think they usually come with a plug. But I'm thinking some of them you might have to wire in. I'm not sure. But you'll have to get power to them. So whether there's a plug or not, I think the one we have a plug on it. I think it came with a plug. It may depend on the dishwasher. But you'll just have to mount a little plug underneath there somewhere where you can plug the dishwasher in. Our plug is actually mounted in the basement underneath the dishwasher. And I just drilled a hole in the floor and put the plug down through the floor. And then I plugged it in underneath. Because it was just easier to do that. And the inspector didn't seem to have a problem with it. I don't know if that's up to code or not. But that's what we did. So you can check with the inspector as far as how he wants that done. But that's all there is to hook a dishwasher up. It's pretty simple. And there is a, they usually come with some kind of a, in the front up at the top of the door, there's usually a piece of sheet metal coming from the top of the dishwasher out with some screw holes in it, which you have to fasten to the bottom of the countertop. And that's to keep the dishwasher from falling out of the hole that you put it into. When you have the door open and you pull the bottom drawer out, the bottom rack full of dishes, that's a lot of weight on the door, and the whole thing would just fall out from underneath the cabinet if you didn't have something to hold it in there. So that's what that little bracket's for, and you need to screw that down. Otherwise, the thing won't be stable when you open it up, like I said. So that's pretty much it with dishwasher. You got to make sure it's level. Otherwise, if it's leaning too forward out or whatever, it could leak. You know, so you want to make sure the bottom of it. You know, follow the instructions. They tell you where to put the level and stuff to make sure everything's level, so you won't have water leaks and stuff like that. So go ahead and put that in. That's pretty straightforward. Your stove, again, is pretty straightforward. You got to put the big plug in. If it's an electric stove, you got to put the big plug in for the stove. You typically have to buy the plug for the stove itself separately. The cord. They usually don't come with a cord, which is kind of crazy because every stove needs one. It's just another way for them to make 10 or 20 bucks on you. So you got to buy the cord. I guess there are some different cords, which maybe is what their excuse. The older stove plugs had three plugs, three prongs. The new ones have four. For whatever that's worth, you can. Yeah, they're separate ground now. Before, the ground and the neutral are all the same. So that's kind of what they've done now. But you can get the right plug and go ahead and mount the stove. Now all the stoves have a tip bracket, and you want to make sure you put that in. It comes with the stove. And you have to basically, and again, they usually give you a template too. It's usually like part of the box or something, or it might give you a measurement. But it goes in the back corner of the opening for the stove in your cabinet, down on the floor. You screw this thing to the floor. And when you slide your stove into its little home there between the two cabinets, and assuming you put that bracket, the tip over bracket, in the right spot, my brain's not working again, it's like 9 o'clock, the back leg of the stove, the bottom part of the leg is wider than there's like a screw that comes down, and then there's a foot that's maybe an inch bigger than the screw or something like that. When you slide it back, that screw, that wider screw, slides into that bracket, and so the bracket kind of looks like a wide fork almost, and the screw part that goes up into the stove goes into the middle of the fork, and the bracket, the foot part, the wide part of the foot slides underneath that spoon, and the spoon holds the foot of that bracket down. So if you open up the door of the stove again and pull out, you know, a rack with a 30-pound turkey in it or something, or your kid starts reefing on the refrigerator on the stove door, the stove will not tip forward into the room, which could happen. And obviously, if that were to happen and you had boiling things on the top, it would all spill on you and be pretty painful. So you want to make sure you put that tip over bracket in, and then make sure it's working. Grab the back of the stove when it's in, you know, all the way in, and pull out. Try and pull out, and it shouldn't come. It should be locked in there, and you should have to pull it out away from the back wall a good 4 or 5 inches before you are able to slide that back out so it, you know, tips toward the room, so you can tip it forward. So just make sure that you put that in. It's a very important safety item. Some people neglect to put them in, and it's a very dangerous situation. You know, you just don't want to do that. If you have a gas stove, you've got to hook the gas line up. I recommend you have the gas company do that, and or at least inspect it so that you're assured it's not leaking. They got to make sure it's not leaking. Even the smallest leak back there can cause you a lot of problems down the road. You know, because that gas can start settling and you know, eventually it could pop and burn and explode, and you just don't want that in your house. So make sure that hose is installed correctly, it's the correct hose, and that there's absolutely no leaks. The refrigerator is pretty straightforward. If it's a simple refrigerator, slide it in, plug it in. Most of them now are vented through the bottom. There's usually a vent on the front, and the air goes in on one side, it blows out the other. There's usually a fan. The old refrigerators had, had the condenser coils, the hot heat coils, were on the back of the refrigerator, so they had to be out away from the wall a certain distance to be able to get a good convection flow of air up along the back to cool those coils off. But now, like I say, most of those coils are underneath the refrigerator, and actually the famous drip pan, that any condensation that comes out of the refrigerator or anything you spill, that water will go down into the drip pan. The drip pan typically sits on top of those hot coils that is how the refrigerator is cooling off. Those coils get hot underneath, so it actually makes the pan dry up quicker. So typically you never really have to empty that pan. Like in the old days, you had to empty it all the time. The damn thing would fill up. But nowadays, they because they're sitting on those hot coils, it pretty much dries itself. And also, you've got a fan under there blowing air through, so it usually, you know, dries right up pretty quickly, and usually don't have any. You just have to take it out every now and then and clean the crud out of it, but you usually don't have to empty it. So like I say, most of them are power vented through the bottom, so you don't need to have clearances anymore. But again, check the manual on the particular refrigerator you're putting in to make sure you don't need to. You pretty much slide it in, plug it in. If you have an ice maker and there's a water connection, you'll have to get water to it. And it's a pretty simple task. You buy an ice maker water kit, and it's either a plastic or a piece of plastic or copper tubing. It's very small. It's about the size of a pencil or smaller. And it typically comes with a little saddle valve, which you put the valve over an existing copper pipe, a half inch or 3/4 inch copper pipe. And it's like a little clamp, and you put the little clamp on, and then you start screwing down the valve, and it actually pierces into the pipe. There's a rubber O-ring seal, and it pierces into the pipe, and that's how it gets its water. And when you unscrew that screw to a bit, it actually shuts the water off, so you can disconnect the pipe, or, you know, before you even put the pipe on, you'll want to do that. That's how they get water. So you just follow the instructions. It's really simple. You just drill a very small hole in the back of the floor and run the pipe down and, you know, hook it up to that saddle valve and hook it up to the back of the refrigerator. Use just fittings and everything already on the ends of the hoses, so you don't need to mess around with it. And just go ahead and turn the water on, and it should be fine. It's really pretty simple. Just make sure that you leave enough of the hose up above behind the refrigerator so that you can pull the refrigerator out and put it back in without, you know, kinking or breaking the hose. So I would recommend putting a good loop back there, maybe two loops, you know, like 2 foot around or 3 foot around, depending on how much hose you have left. So when you pull it out, that loop just kind of untangles itself or unloops itself and allows you to pull it out without breaking or kinking the hose or anything like that. So the next thing is moving into the bathroom. Installing your vanities, again, they're pretty much the same as your countertops and your counters, except that, you know, your base cabinets, you know, you pretty much just sit them in there, put a few screws into the wall, into some studs so they don't rock around, and then put your countertop on. Again, I would definitely put the faucets on your countertop before you put them on top of the cabinet. I did that. You put the faucets in and also put the drain arrangement all on it as well. I did that all before I put the countertop on top of the counter in the bathroom, on top of the vanity. Mount all that stuff, you know, according to the instructions, and then pick the whole thing up and drop it on top of the counter. And again, you can put a layer of silicone around the outside edge of the vanity top, the cabinet top, and lay the countertop or the vanity top on top in the right spot gently, and let that ooze underneath, and that'll help hold it. And usually there's some way of fastening that as well with some kind of L bracket or clamp, depending on the type of counter you have. You know, there should be some way to fasten it. Although, you know, we used cultured marble, and I don't think there was any way to fasten it. So I just put it down on a good bed of silicone, and it's been fine. It hasn't moved anywhere. The stuff's pretty heavy, so it's not going anywhere anyway. And you got all the drains from the sink attached to it too, which will tend to hold it to some extent. So it worked out fine. So you go ahead and mount that. Then you got to go ahead and connect your water up to your sink. Again, just follow the instructions. Sinks are pretty easy to put in these days. I use those. You can get their little flexible hoses to connect the sink up to the shutoff valve. They're pretty inexpensive. They've got a metal wrap on them, like a mesh wrap on them, to help protect them from bursting. I haven't heard of one of those things bursting in years. They make them pretty good these days. I would replace those hoses maybe in 10 years. Just replace them. They're pretty cheap, just to make sure you don't have any problems. But that's all I've got in my house are those things everywhere. On the toilets and underneath the sinks. They come in different lengths, and you just buy the length that you think you're going to need for your particular hookup, and hook them up. It takes 2 seconds. The toilet ones are different from ones for sinks. So just bear in mind that you've got to get the right type for the right application. And I didn't talk about this, but you probably are going to have to sweat your valves on at this point before you turn your water on. But after the sheetrock's up, you'll have to go around and sweat all your valves on, because when you did your rough-in, you probably just put a cap. A cap on the pipe, and you're going to need to cut the cap off. Make sure obviously the water's turned off. Cut the cap off, and then sweat on a shutoff valve, a simple shutoff valve. You can buy them at the store. And again, they have ones for toilets and ones for sinks. There's different ones, and you can get them. There's some different flavors of them. You can see what's available and how you want to do it. Just pick those up, and they just, you just sweat them on just like you sweat on any other thing. It's not a big deal. I'm going to be doing some videos here pretty soon. I've been pretty hammered with work here the last couple weeks, which is why the show's been a little bit thin here, only a couple shows a week. But I'm going to be doing some videos pretty soon. I've just got to get through this little hump that I'm at work here. But this winter we'll have some good videos up at some point. It's one of the things I'm going to do is talk about how to sweat a pipe and how to sweat fittings on and things like that. So, just go ahead and connect the water up to your sink. Remembering the left is hot, right's cold, and hopefully your rough-ins was done correctly, so that'll make sense. For the drains in your sinks, and also underneath, your kitchen sink, bathroom sinks, any of the sinks, you have to have a trap under there. And you can go to the hardware store, your home supply store, and you can buy little trap kits. They all come ready to go. They've got the piece that connects to the PVC that comes out. You got a trap connector on the wall, which I told you to install when you did your rough in. You take the cover off that, and they're going to give you a piece that goes into that, and you tighten that screw down on it. It's going to attach to the actual trap part, the little U part, and then there's going to be a tail piece that goes from the bottom of the sink, going to connect up underneath the sink with a big huge nut, and it's going to go down into the trap, and it's going to connect to that with another big huge nut. Usually it's plastic, and they work pretty well, and they're pretty cheap. So you just go ahead and hook up all those traps. And like I say, the one in the kitchen is going to have the extra little the little T on it for connecting the dishwasher drain as well. They're pretty easy to put on. It doesn't take long at all to mount the sink. I mean, you can do the whole thing in half an hour. It's a piece of cake, especially, again, if you mount your... The hardest thing probably is putting the drain in and hooking up the little shutoff thing, the little... you know, the little rod that's behind the sink, getting all that lined up and working is probably the hardest thing, and that's not hard either. So just follow the instructions. It's really pretty simple. So you want to go ahead and mount all those. Toilets. To do a toilet, you're going to need a wax ring. Most of the time when you buy a toilet, it'll come with one. I think the ones I bought came with one. If you have like a tile floor or there's a little bit more of a gap between the John connector on the floor and the bottom of the toilet, you can get extra heavy duty thicker wax rings, or you could actually put two wax rings on top of each other. I've seen people do that. So, you know, if you need that extra thickness, and you'll tell when you go to put it on, if it's not squishing down well. If you're putting it down on the floor and you don't feel it squishing, it's not thick enough. You're going to need a thicker wax ring. So you can buy those and you can use those. But basically how you do it, it's pretty simple. You want to put the toilet together. First of all, you need to mount the back to the bottom. Typically, you have to do that. Mount the bowl on the mount the bowl, which is the bottom part, you know, where you set up to the tank. And usually there's a couple of screws that go through the bottom of the tank. They've got a sealing washer underneath them. And you take that screw and it goes down through the bottom part of the toilet, the tank, the bowl, excuse me. And there's some screws that or nuts rather, you put on the bottom of those big long screws on the bottom of the tank, of the bottom of the bowl part, and you just clamp it down. Now, word to the wise, don't over-tighten those screws. They don't need to be that tight. If you over-tighten them, you're going to break the tank and or the bowl because it's China. You can't over-tighten it. They're pretty strong, but, you know, basically you want to tighten the screws till they just start to catch and then maybe a couple turns more. You know, there's a pretty good soft gasket between the bowl and the tank that gets squished a little bit when you push the screws on it. You don't need to squish it so much that it's really tight, because if you do, you're going to break, like I say, the tank or the bowl. So go ahead and read the instructions again. It'll tell you how tight to make that, and it'll tell you, like, you know, go till it hits in another, you know, three turns or something like that or whatever. So just go ahead and follow that and mount that, making sure the bowl and the tank are square with each other. And you're going to want to take, the next step is to take your John connection on the floor. It's going to have the little slots for the screws. You're going to want to take your little screw kit. Sometimes the little flange adapters, that's not a John adapter, flange adapters have the screws. Sometimes you have to buy them separately. You want to get them that are brass. Don't use just regular metal screws because they will rust and break in pretty short order. So make sure they're brass. And mount them, put them in the correct slots of the flange adapter so they're facing up into the room. They're pretty high. They're like 2-inch high bolts. Go ahead and mount those, and mount them so they're on the left and the right-hand side, even with the wall, parallel with the wall, you know, looking at the toilet, be on the left and the right-hand side, looking at the flange adapter from, you know, looking at the wall. And go ahead and put those there, and then you're gonna gently pick the toilet up. And what you can do is just put your hand down into the easiest way to pick it up is with your like right hand, if you're right-handed. Just stick your hand down into the bowl and grab underneath the bottom where the water goes out. Obviously, it's a new toilet, so you don't have to worry about it being dirty. put your hand under there and just grab it there, and then put your other hand on the back of the tank. And you may want to have, you know, your wife there, a friend or somebody to help you guide it. You need to lay it down, set it down on top. So underneath the toilet, there's a little round piece that's supposed to fit on top of the wax ring that you're going to put down on top of the flange adapter. Oh, by the way, you got to do that before you pick your toilet up. I forgot to tell you. Put the flange adapter in, the wax ring into the flange adapter. And the wax rings typically have a little plastic piece that goes down, like into the pipe, and then the wax ring sits on top. And you put the toilet has a little round piece on the bottom that goes on and goes on top of that wax. So if somebody's underneath, they can kind of guide it for you and make sure it sits on that wax ring square. And you should have to take the toilet and just twist it ever so slightly, you know, a half inch little twist back and forth and wiggle it a little bit, and it should squish down onto that wax ring. And it should squish onto the toilet till it hits the floor. Again, if it doesn't squish, then the wax ring is not deep enough, and you'll either have to put another one on top or get a more heavy duty one or something like that. and just squish it down so it's flat on the floor. Once it's hitting the floor, don't move it anymore. You don't need to twist it, move it, do anything with it. Just leave it as is. Those two screws that you put through the flange adapter should now be sticking up through the little holes on the side of the toilet, hopefully, if everything's lined up right. And if that's the case, you can go ahead and put the bolts on those screws and affix the toilet to the floor with those screws. Again, don't over-tighten those screws. If you do, you'll break the bottom of the toilet. You can easily break the toilet. So just do it so it's tight, a couple more turns, and be done with it. Usually you have to break off the top of the screws because they're much longer than they need to be. You might have to cut them off with a pair of, diagonal cutters or with an axe saw or something. And then the toilet will come with these little white covers that you put on top of that screw just to hide it so it looks good. And the toilet's mounted, and then what you can do is get water to it. And again, you can use one of those flexible tubes, go from the bottom of the tank over to your shutoff valve, disconnect that up, turn the water on, and the thing should work. They're usually pretty well set from the factory. Usually don't have to adjust them at all if you get a decent one. So that's how you put the toilets in. It's not that difficult. You want to test it, turn the water on, let it fill up, flush it a few times, look at the look underneath the tank and make sure nothing's leaking under there. Of course, it could leak where you've got the hose connected. It could leak at that washer between the tank and the bowl. It could also leak around the screws, but generally it won't. They're pretty well made. If it's a new toilet, it shouldn't leak. But if it does, then just tighten the screws down a little bit more gently. Just another turn or so should stop it from leaking. Don't get nuts. Check around the bowl, make sure there's no leaks coming from the bottom. Check underneath. If you can see underneath, you can check underneath, make sure it's leaking. But if you did the wax ring right, it will not leak. It's a pretty tried and true system, and it shouldn't give me any problems. So that's how you do the toilets. The toilets and the sinks, pretty straightforward. All your electrical items, I'm not going to go through this because it's pretty much straightforward. You just mount the fixtures. You've pre-wired it already. Follow the directions to the fixtures and just mount them and wire them in. You're going to connect the white to the white, the black to the black, and the ground to ground, and that's pretty much it. Not much to explain there as far as light fixtures, other than you're going to have quite a few of them to do. But again, it's not difficult to do at this point. Just hooking things up. Same thing like the vanities on the wall. You'll have to screw them to the wall. You can figure that out. That's pretty straightforward. I'll talk for a minute about carpeting. If you're going to put your own carpeting in, anytime you go to do any flooring, you want to obviously make sure that you clean the floor before you put the floor down. For a bunch of reasons. One is it's just not clean to have all kinds of crap under your carpet. But secondly, if you do have some stuff under there, it's going to eventually make bumps in the top of the carpet. You'll be able to feel it when you walk, and it'll actually wear the carpet out. So make sure you clean the rooms out good, vacuum them well before you put carpeting in. You want to make sure you use a good pad underneath the carpet. That helps save the carpet. It cushions the carpet. Not only does it feel good on your feet, it also makes the cushion. If the carpet's sitting on something soft, it's less apt to break the fibers in the carpet, which is what's going to make it wear out sooner. So a good pad, not only saves your feet, but it saves the carpet as well. So go ahead and install a pad. Now, when you go to put carpeting in, typically what you're going to do is you're going to put a tack strip all the way around the outside edge. And you can buy these at any of the carpet stores. It's like a, I don't know if you remember those old wooden yardsticks. They kind of look like wooden yardsticks, but they've got little teeny nails sticking up at like a 45 degree angle from one side of them. And what you do is you put those little tack strips along the outside edge of the wall, about 2 inches in to the room from the edge of the wall, all the way around the outside edge. And you make it so the little tacks are kind of facing the wall. They're kind of at an angle. So you want that angle so they're like facing the wall, the outside edge of the room. And just go ahead and nail those down to the floor. You put a couple of, a couple of short nails in them. Some of them might even come with nails. I don't remember. I put too many of them in. But just go ahead and nail them down to the floor all the way around the outside edge. If it's a cement floor, you'll have to use some kind of a cement nail or a screw or something. And go ahead and mount those all the way around the outside edge of the room, including in the doorways. If you have a doorway, you need to put them in the doorway as well. Again, a couple inches in the room from the outside edge of the room or the door. you're then they're going to take your padding, and you're going to cover the entire floor with the padding on the inside, about an inch in from the tack strip, all the way around. You know, the whole inside of the floor has to be covered. Like I say, leave the tack strip exposed, and maybe an inch, you know, about an inch of floor between the edge of the edge of the padding and the tack strip. Then you're going to go ahead and you're going to put your carpeting down in the room. You know, and a good way is to get it kind of cut roughly outside and then bring it in and lay it in the room so it's centered more or less in the room. You always want to cut it for so it's a couple inches bigger in each direction. And you're going to center it so that couple inches is kind of evenly distributed. So there's, you know, maybe an inch or an inch and a half up against the wall all the way around all four sides of the room, or as many sides as there is. And, you know, what you're going to do, you're going to need to get a, they call a kicker. And it's a little tool that's got a big cushioned end on it. And on the other end is a flat part that's got some, like, little teeth on it. And what you do with the kicker is you go around the edge of the room and you put the kicker down on the carpet so the cushion part is facing the middle of the room, and you put the little, you put the other end that's got the little teeth on it, like roughly on top of the tack strip where the tack strip is, and you just give that a little kick with your knee while you're kneeling down. You give it a little kick with your knee, you'll kind of bump it with your knee, and what it does, it's a carpet stretcher, it stretches the carpet, and at the same time makes it, makes the carpet get grabbed by those little nails on the tack strip. And as you go around the whole room, you need to trim the carpet as you're doing this too. You might need to trim it a couple times. Get a really good sharp carpet knife to do this. You know, just kind of bend the carpet right into the corner of the room, you know, flat against the floor and then flat up against the wall, and just cut it right there in the seam all the way around the outside edge. It's pretty straightforward until you get to corners. You have to, you know what you're doing on the corners. Do one side, then do the other, and then cut it at a 45 in, on the edge. That's basically what you got to do to be able to fit it in the corner. But you'll see how to do it. It's not rocket science. And then take your kicker and go all the way around the room and keep kicking it a few times all the way around the room. And what you're doing is you're stretching the carpet and making it grab onto those teeth on the tack strip all the way around. And when you get done, you should have a nice taut rug that is held in place by those tack strips. You shouldn't even be able to pick up the edge of the carpet, because it should be stretched and then stuck to those nails of the tack strip all the way around. And that's pretty much how you do it. And at your doors, you want to take the carpet and you want to fold it under a little bit. Typically how they do it is they fold it under a little bit, and then do the same thing. They do it with the tack strip. You know, you use your stretcher and you knee it and get it tight on the tack strip, and then you have it kind of bent under right at the door. And usually you'll put a piece of, they've say it's got special metal molding or cap piece that goes between the carpeting and whatever the hallway floor is, be it another piece of carpet or be it hardwood or whatever. You get it the right little molding piece there. They sell it at all the carpeting stores. That'll hold the carpet down and transition it over to whatever's in the hallway or whatever's in the other room. So you get that stuff and you put it down on top of that folded piece, and it usually nails or screws down, and that's how you finish up your you know, between the rooms or between you know, under doorways or whatever. So that's how you put carpet in 2 minutes or less. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with it. Usually you can get it installed pretty cheap, so I would just recommend you do that. It's just easier. The stuff's heavy. If you cut it wrong, you know, you kind of got a problem. If you have to do any seaming at all, carpeting now comes quite often in 14-foot widths, which is usually covers most rooms. But if you have a big, like a bonus room, like our bonus room is, it's 24 feet wide by like 30 feet deep or something like that. It had to be seamed. And to seam the carpet, you need to get the seaming tape, and then you need to use an iron to like glue it on, and it's a pain in the neck. It's easier to have it done. They do a nice joint. It's pretty hard to see when they get done with it. So, you know, I recommend having it done if you have a few bucks. You can usually get it done pretty inexpensively if you shop around. You know, a couple $100 will install carpeting in a few rooms. Doesn't take them long to do it. So, that's pretty much what I wanted to cover today. Tomorrow I'll talk a little bit, I think, about, if I get a chance, a little bit about interior stairs and railings and stuff like that. There's some code requirements I want to let you know about, just so you have an idea of what's there. And I'm noticing this recording seems really loud for some reason. I hope this is working. It may not be. Anyway, I'll listen to it when I get home. Anyway, I thank you for listening to this, the Homeowner's Friend Podcast, if it worked. The podcast that will help you achieve the American dream and live the best life you can, even on a rice and beans budget. Take care, folks. Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening.
It'll take me a week to clean it, but by then I'll still be drunk. I got the blues. Oh, the homeowner blues. Well, man's home is his castle. This one's just a hassle. Homeowner blues.